Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. Gina's laughing as usual. What's going on, Gina?
Well, it's episode number 53, and yes. I would just like to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that this is episode number 53. A whole entire year has gone by.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Gina. Yeah. That makes me so happy to hear you say that. And trust me, it's hard to get praise from Gina because she does not take
that
it.
That is not true.
No, but it's worth it when you get it.
Yeah.
So she has been, when she says it's, you know, you should be proud, it actually makes me very, very proud. So I'm very happy about that. It's been an amazing time. And this episode is a special internal episode with David Tracy and Lawn Grows, because I wanted to really get them together and talk about all the stuff we've done this year. We've done so much this year.
Oh, my goodness.
And we continue to do so much. And I think 2016 is going to be even crazier.
Oh, yeah.
So
in a good way.
In a good way, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been really great. Sean's here. You want to say something? Come on, say something, Sean. Say something for the intro.
Here.
Come on. Go ahead. Come on, Sean. Sean, what do you want to say? This is the end of the year episode.
Oh, well, it's been a great year, hasn't it? Let's talk about it.
Good. There you go.
I know. All right.
It's
Sean
good.
Was a great addition to our team this year.
Yes.
That was one major plus.
Yeah, Sean's been super, super awesome. I love having Sean around.
Right.
He entertains me nonstop. And if any of you guys out there who are talking on
Irish
social,
exit right now.
You should know that. And when you're talking on social, on Facebook, whatever, the person you're actually talking to is Sean Stang.
So be nice
because he's awesome. All right. Bye. Thanks, Sean. All right. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this podcast. It's been super fun. It is the end of the year for us. We just had our holiday lunch. A couple of Bloody Marys were involved. So hopefully you guys will enjoy it. All right. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fernell.
Mongo and Goofy Foot does sound like a comedy cop show. That did not work out in the early 80s.
Mongo and Goofy Foot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
It was the sitcom version of Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, it's a guy on a dog or a guy on an orangutan.
That was one of the favorite interview things I've ever heard of was Dave Navarro. They asked him what his favorite movie was. Mm. And in all seriousness, he goes, Turner and Hooch. And the interviewer's like, have you ever even seen that movie? No, but I know if I did, it'd be my favorite.
Yeah, your favorite one.
All right. Okay, so this is, believe it or not, Year in Review podcast we did last year was a very popular one, and some of our listeners was one of their favorite ones. Cool.
It is cool.
And when you say some, you mean like two?
No, I mean some people respond back, so like, hey, you know, I really like that because it really got an idea of all the things you guys have done in a year or whatever, you know. Believe it or not, there are some people there that are V-Ray fans that listen to our podcast and listen to what we're doing. So
seems like that was a year ago.
It was.
Yeah, it's still last year.
It's still last year. But remember, we also said at the end of that podcast, like, just you wait till you see what we do next year. And so now it's time for us to report on what we actually
did. Except now I feel that even more about this year.
Yeah.
Like the way like an exponential way.
Right. So I thought it'd be good to sort of talk, just remind ourselves, and maybe it'll feel good after a while. It's like, wow, look at all this stuff we did in a year.
Mm-hmm.
So podcast was one of the things that came out over the last year.
Yeah. And you were interviewed.
I was interviewed about the podcast.
Recently. Is it CG Society, right?
CG Society, there's an article about about labs and about the podcast itself, which was cool. I thought it was a really good idea that we were trying to talk about the podcast a little bit more, because I thought it's been something that I think we've been really enjoying. I kind of didn't know. I mean, it was kind of an experiment, right? We did it last year, start at the beginning, or a year ago, and it's like, I'm going to get a couple of microphones, do a little bit of try this out. And, in the vein of what Chaos Group has been doing, allowing me to do weird stuff, like, giving me permission to just do weird stuff. And it's not like this podcast. Like this podcast. and it's not necessarily, it's not expensive to try out. Right. You just get a couple of good microphones. You do a little bit of here and there and see how it goes.
Probably costs more in scotch than it does in microphones.
it's true. So that was.
And yeah, I get Christmas cards from Foam Mart because
really
because of all of the foam we purchased for the room. Like, come back, you are our best customer.
but over the course of a year, our audience has grown quite a bit. A few things that I've noted is that there's a whole lot more subscribers. It used to be a lot of people just listen to it on the website. Right now, there's a lot more people that subscribe to the podcast, which is great.
On iTunes?
Yeah. Or iTunes.
They saw the explicit rating and they were in.
Yes. iTunes and then
others. We work hard for that.
And other things like Pocket Cast and other services out there that people use. I think it's something called Outcast and stuff. So, and our overall average listenership is now putting us in the top 10 percentile of all the podcasts. So
the pressure's on now.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, that's awesome. But now I kind of want to build on a bigger audience. So I don't know. There's different audiences I think we can reach out to and try to get up to the masses a little bit more.
It's one of those things where I'm always surprised, like, how often it's brought up to me when I'm out, or if I'm talking to like people at the Foundry and like people that I used to do. So when I did the podcast at the Foundry.
Yeah. You did one for were the one who sort of.
The Modcast.
The Modcast. Yeah.
It was for Modo, right? Mm-hmm. And so you were the one who sort of told me, like, here's what you need to do a podcast. Here's the services you should look at. Here's the equipment you should look at. So you really got me started on it.
Well, it's funny because we always had to, like, for my coworkers at the time, it's like, hey, did you listen to the Modcast? We did this, that. And like, no, there's no anything. And it's been so different with CG Garage, because everyone here listens to it, and I'll be like riding in the car with Lon, and we'll be hearing your voice.
Yeah, over Chris the is always radio, riding like, with us, especially on long trips like to Vegas.
Right,
it's and like I listen to 4 hours of. It's like Chris is tied up in the back of the car.
And I like how it's turned into being like this real. It's more of an insider. There's so much fake speak in.
In CG.
And when you're talking about projects, when you're talking about films and everything like that, because everybody has their things that they should say and shouldn't say. And it just seems like it's far more casual. And I recommend it as just having like, it actually provides, I think, a really kind of nice insight, a more realistic window into what's happening, the challenges of it, and what new things are happening and everything like that. It's
yeah. And what's been interesting to me is that, it started off with just like, I'm going to get a couple of people. I almost didn't expect it to turn into what it did, which is fine because it has to evolve on its own. I wanted it to be almost way goofier than it is now. But suddenly I've got like Tim Miller on and we're talking about Deadpool and him directing Deadpool. Like, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect Wes Ball to contact us on Twitter and him, he's the director of the Maze Runner series, and he comes in like a few days after that tweet and he ends up recording a podcast about his career here. So that was a surprising one to me too.
Yeah.
And the one that I did with Norman Seeff, to this day, it's not necessarily our biggest download one because I don't think people know who Norman Seeff is. But those who have listened to it have replied to like, oh my God. I mean, just look at the comment sections on the Norman Seeff ones. They're like, this is a major one. And that took a direction I didn't expect. I mean, I was actually, after I did that podcast with him, I was shaking. I was just kind of like really emotional about it. It was weird. Maybe that I didn't have much sleep at THU that also affected it. But still, it was really cool. So we can splice in some other podcasts along the way. Is there anything notable, one like one of the ones, your favorite ones that you had, Lon?
I mean, besides last year's Year in the Review?
Yeah, that was.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I thought was really cool is that you actually nailed all 52. Every week was something new.
I skipped a couple weeks.
But I remember when you even had, you had some, like, they were all lined up from THU and the whole, you know, like, you came back with five of them from THU.
Seven, actually.
Seven.
Yeah, I had a lot lined up after THU. And it was a lot of fun. I was recording one to two a day while I was there.
And you didn't mess around. Like, you brought the nice mics. You had your own little special stands for them and everything.
Yep.
Like that.
Yep. Yep.
You didn't just do it on an iPhone.
I didn't. After I got all the equipment and stuff and I got the new mixing board, I actually had my friend Brady Harris, who writes the theme song to the podcast himself. And he's a musician, obviously, as you guys know. And he sat here with microphones and he and I were testing it. And he was helping me figure out how to get the mixing board to work. And then we were discussing, what's the best way for me to make this go on the road? Because the stands we have here are too big for me to take on the road. So we got all those little GorillaPod things, and those became our stands. And I've made the entire podcast. I've got a bag here, and I just take the whole podcast in a bag, and every time it goes through security, I got to explain everything. but the whole podcast has been on the road with me. I've taken it to Stuttgart. I've taken it to obviously in FMX. Obviously, we went to SIGGRAPH in LA, but it was in the convention center. We were doing podcasts there.
Didn't you? THU. You recorded at the Standard too, didn't you?
I did not record anything at the Standard.
Mexico City?
No, not Mexico City, but Cancun.
Cancun.
So I've taken it a lot of places with me, which I think has been great. So it's an excuse for me. We travel, as you know, and so whenever I travel, let's do a podcast somewhere. And so it's been great that way. Okay, let's talk about a couple of other things that were interesting. I want to sort of go slightly chronologically. GTC was a big one again for us in terms of the way it is every year, because we were obviously very involved in GPU technology. We did another thing with Construct, which was kind of interesting. Just before GTC, we had a combination of all crazy crap that we do here, right? We did Motion Builder, GPU rendering on the cloud.
From an airplane.
On a
smartphone.
Yeah. That was the most Boris project I've ever done.
Yeah.
Because Boris is obviously I forgot his official title, but he's pretty much in charge of V-Ray Cloud and V-Ray App SDK.
Yeah, he's a product manager or a business line manager for cloud.
And he's crazy and awesome at the same time, and there's very little that's impossible when it comes to Boris, and it, also his imagination. He's able to think well beyond the scope of what people would actually try to do, I think. And so we did experiment in the video out there that we showed at GTC, which was taking Construct and doing motion capture through an internet pipe, piping the data from Motion Builder into the cluster in Santa Clara over a rack of VCAs that I think we used four of them. So that was 32 GPUs that we're using to render and feed that back into a browser that we used to show live motion capture as it was happening, ray tracing, and you could play that on a phone anywhere in the world.
Yep.
Kind of crazy.
That is super crazy.
So that was sort of the okay, that was like, all right, that's how good we got it. And there was a lot of things that developed both on the GPU side and on the cloud side that made that possible, that I think was a really interesting part of what we did over at GTC.
Yeah, now he's got that thing hooked up to just regular CPU cloud, throw a distributed rendering to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 buckets.
The buckets start instantly,
and it's done every.
So imagine you're rendering on that many machines. That's one thing. But what's amazing about what he does is that, like, how fast those buckets start. Yep,
that's the trick. Mm-hmm.
The trick is the distribution happens really quickly. Which is pretty awesome.
Well, it's been fun to just kind of follow the Construct GPU story. I mean, right. I first came into that part of the story in April 2014, mm-hmm. and just looking at it then,
yep.
and comparing it to that following SIGGRAPH and then this most recent GTC, mm-hmm. it's just been a huge.
It has been
huge progression,
and just for those who are wondering, well, when is Construct going to be done? It kind of is almost done. It's really, really close. Kevin is strategic about what he wants to do about it. He's still working a little bit, mostly on sound and music at this point. But all the rendering's done, the story's done, the edit's pretty much locked, and we've seen it. And it's going to be, you know, up to him when he's going to show it to people, because he wants to make sure it's really well put together.
Should we cosplay? Can we dress up like
robots?
Like robots. I'll be the little kid robot.
Okay. Yeah.
Spiky. What's his name?
Oh gosh. Why am I not remember? No.
Rivet boy.
I forgot his name. I'm sorry. I'm blanking, guys. Sorry, Kevin. But I didn't
know he had a name.
Oh, he does.
Alonzo.
No, he has a name. He has a name.
Braden. No.
But you saw. I mean, what was your impression when you saw it, Lon?
Oh, it's like it's almost emotional, right? It's almost like an emotional thing.
It's very emotional
to see, to be, you know, so close to it from the initial concept to right. now. It's like, you know, I mean, in talking to Kevin too, we're like, we have to celebrate the release of this thing. We have to do something that's, you know, kind of fun to get everybody out that worked on it and dedicated time and effort to it to see it in a real venue. So to get in a movie theater with, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, partners in art. Okay. And how we want to support some of these things, because I think this is something that came up that you brought up to me when I first joined the company about going out there and supporting people that want to do some visionary projects and they look at us and help us do what we need to do. And in some cases we get hyper involved, like we do with Construct, right? Where I end up being a producer on it and everything else. But we also just, you know, if we believe in the people that are out there, we believe that they're going to create some good products, and we know that this is something we want to support them on, and not everyone has the resources to be, you know, to do what they do. And so we'll help them out with licensing or whatever to make that happen. And two major projects that came out last year that we were both involved with, both of which got optioned as films. So we should note that this is two partners in art that are now going to be turned into major feature films. Okay. And one of them is Leviathan.
Yeah.
Where we helped Rory out.
Just awesome.
Which just is awesome. Just incredible.
My jaw dropped when the first scene, you know, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Well, I remember very like early days of Construct, right? And I went out and Kevin suggested that we put Rory on the Digital Film League and talk about stuff. And so I got Rory on there and we went out to have some drinks with him, and he was hanging out and he's telling me about what he's trying to do. And he showed me the concept art book, right, that he's been working on. And for those of you, there's a podcast on it. So go back and listen to the Rory Robinson podcast. And by the way, Rory, for those of you who are having a hard time finding it, is the Irish spelling of Rory, which is Rauairi. But he showed me the concept. I was like, wow, that's amazing. This would be incredible. And he's like, yeah, it's like, it's kind of like Moby Dick in space. He goes, yep, that's exactly what it's about, but this could actually work. And I was like, yeah, I could. It's like Dune, Moby Dick, and weird space, but there's no ground. So it's a gas planet. I don't know what's going on. It's really just incredible. And then suddenly, you know, 9 months later, Rory emerges with no sleep and nothing, having rendered on his computers at home, as well as Blur helping him out with render notes there. And this short emerged. And I was like, oh my God.
The thing that's crazy to me about it is, you know, sometimes you'll see a movie and there'll be one shot in the movie. It's like the one thing that you remember because it's just this amazingly done shot. And then this very small, just little teaser, this pitch, the shot where the launches the smaller skiff like ship. And then as it is going down, you begin to see the scale of the large ship above it.
Right.
Like, that is such a great shot.
Yep.
And it's like in this tiny little teaser, like I will always remember like that one little shot.
Yeah. The motion is perfect. And the way it just sort of rides down.
I mean, I even the way the animation worked, and I know, you know, he just sort of muscled his way through it and did what he had to do to get it done. But it's incredible what happened in the end, because even just the shot of the creature coming out of the clouds, eating that one little bird like thing or whatever pterodactyl type thing or whatever it was, just like it's like, whoa, that thing's huge. You could sense the scale of it just by the way it was rendered, lit, animated, everything. It was just incredible. So really, really cool to see that. So I'm excited for what Roy is doing, for sure. The other one was Sundays.
Yep. The Post-Panic.
Post-Panic, right? So tell us a little bit about Post-Panic and about Sundays, Lon.
And they, I mean, it was amazing to see both of those kind of came out back to back.
Very close, right?
Right.
And there was an article about both of them.
Yeah. And it was amazing, like that week, all of a sudden, both trailers went kind of viral, got, you know, hundreds of thousands of hits.
Millions
of hits.
Yep.
And then, you know, then the articles came out where it was like optioned, picked up.
Yep.
You know, like we were going to make these into movies.
Yep.
And I remember looking at Chris going, whoa, like.
What just happened?
What just happened? Like both of them immediately right away. And we're like, that's pretty amazing because that seems to be the way that kind of new stories, new content is coming out.
Like, it's cool because, and obviously, you know, it's the idea now is instead of pitching to the executives, you listen to the Rory podcast if you want to hear more about his opinion on it, because he really talks about this in detail or why that happens. But basically, instead of pitching to the executives the idea of this thing you're going to do, you pitch it to the public. And you basically give the executives no choice but to say, obviously, the public loves this. I have validation that this is going to work, and therefore, that's why I'm going to option it, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's basically what happened. And Rory put it out there. They saw the excitement, and Neil Blomkamp called him up and said, I want to be your executive producer on it, which is huge, huge. So very exciting to see that. And I think that was another big thing is the partners in art stuff that we had.
So I would be remiss for us not to bring up the Nino trailer.
No. Yeah. Because that just
dropped recently,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Next on the list.
Yeah. The Nino one is along the lines of the Construct thing, right? And so that was really, really huge. And I think, you know, even Plug is also starting to get some news that's happening. So there may be some stuff going on with Plug as well.
Yeah. Well, Ninja was pretty cool because, you know, I remember meeting Miguel over at Noman.
And this is almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago, and we met over at Noman, and Alex Alvarez kind of introduced us, and he said, hey, we're thinking about, you know, helping Miguel out with this idea that he's got for short. And, of course, he and Tran had done the
Green Ruby Pumpkin. Yep.
Which was, you know, which was amazing. And so we went over there, we're talking about it. And he, you know, the idea at that point was to maybe try to enlist some Noman students, which I think eventually did get involved in it. And to get it done like in 3, 4, 6 months, you know, to see how it would go. And of course, when Miguel and Tran do something, like they are dedicated, and I just love watching the presentations of, you know, when they talk about anything they do, and they completely transform their entire house, like it into a set to make this movie. They made so many of the sets. The characters are just absolutely like everything about it is completely feature quality. And of course, you know, here we are a couple of years later where they've really kickstarted it and got that. And actually, that was one of the first Partners in Art conversations that we had. It was like a project to maybe kick that off to say, okay, if you guys don't make your Kickstarter, you know, maybe there's something that we can do to help, because
right.
You know, I felt pretty strongly that we want to help bring some of these ideas to light. And I remember watching the Kickstarter get closer and closer and closer. And then finally, like with an hour to go, they like just completely everybody donated at the last minute, mm-hmm. and made it. And so we've been following it since, you know, since then, and getting some teasers. And of course we've had them present at FMX.
The theme of our booth and everything was Nina. Yeah. We were giving out.
That was in 2014.
Yeah.
2014.
Yeah. Yep.
And then presented again at SIGGRAPH.
At SIGGRAPH.
Yep. You know, to show progress. And then
it was a V-Ray Days presentation there. And we actually did an independent filmmakers, video.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to our YouTube this year, you'll see a video that featured Plug, and
David Levy.
David and
yep.
And also what
and Nino.
El Nino is with Miguel
Ortega.
So it was really kind of interesting to see those guys talk about the dedication it takes, you know.
And I mean, I think to me, I don't know. I don't want to jinx anything, but I mean, to me, that is easily a feature or a television show. Like, the whole concept of it is awesome.
Yeah.
It's an amazing world that they have.
Cryptozoology, the built. Idea of it, and the world that they created, it could be really, really cool. And the cool thing is, if you listen to the thing, it's like, you know, what are you going to do? Is it going to be a feature film or a series? He goes, well, it could be either, because if you think about it, all the different creatures could have their own stories, right? Yep. So it's going to be every episode is a different weird story that can go with it. So definitely awesome, awesome idea.
Yeah, that's one I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. So... let's talk about a couple other things. Let's go to FMX. When we were at FMX, it was another really great FMX
year. You were on the ground there.
I was. So it was interesting to me because I was thinking about going to FMX, but I was actually not involved in that much of the Chaos Group stuff. While there was a lot of Chaos Group stuff going on, we had a really great booth, really great presentations. We had a full lineup of V-Ray Days presentations that were really powerful and really strong. I was invited by FMX to go there to speak on behalf of a panel of speakers on digital humans hosted by Mike Seymour. So it was the first time I was going to be there to talk about the WikiHuman project, which ended up being really pretty cool. And it was just before releasing the first set of data for Digital Emily 2.0. And that came out... as part of the WikiHuman project, and it was kind of a landmark for me in terms of getting that out there. Since then, it's been used in quite a few different areas and ideas. I've seen it in WebGL.
Yeah, WebGL.
It's like I've seen that data, and people have been thanking me. Like I saw something about it on some forum for Blender. And people were asking, well, I don't know what's the proper way to put this together. And so I just replied to the comments like, oh, it's really simple. Like, try to think of it as simply as possible and put these in. And it's like, oh my God, we can't thank you enough for this having it, especially the Blender crowd, which is all about open source data sets.
Yeah.
So to them, it was really, really cool. So it was really kind of fun to be there.
And now the data set is 2.1?
2.1. We made some tweaks to it. That was very shortly after it, because obviously once we started putting it out there, we started realizing that there need to be some adjustments. So we made a 2.1. We are going to release a whole new data set, which I'm not going to get too much into, but I can tell you that it is by far the most detailed one we have. And there's a lot, and it also will have a longer life as well, because we'll be able to do a lot more with it over the long run. So... all right, Stephen, you can leave the room. It's okay. It won't bother us. All right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the software we've done. There's a lot of software we put out this year. A lot.
A lot of big updates.
Yes.
And some brand new products as well.
Yes.
One, I mean, the one for me that I, because I'm former Foundry person, I was always very, very excited about the V-Ray for Foundry products, and V-Ray for Nuke for me, having that launch is,
yeah,
was a really interesting one. And just because it's very different from, you know, V-Ray is such a nice, natural, and easy to understand association with a 3D app like Modo and Maya and Max and
right.
Cinema 4D and everything like that. But the V-Ray and Nuke connection is such a, has been such an interesting one. And over the course of this product coming out, you know, we got to work with Shaheen.
Yeah, we needed someone like a, we needed a Shaheen.
Thank you, Shaheen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
we
awesome.
Needed a Shaheen because the thing is, while it was a great idea, it was hard for us to imagine all the things you could do with it. And Shaheen was like the perfect person to just go in there and try the craziest shit I've ever seen.
So well, his enthusiasm is unbridled.
Yeah. Right. It's awesome. There's a couple of things that he showed that blew me away because, you know, you wrap your head around, yeah, I can have live renderings inside a Nuke and, you know, I can hook it up through nodes and great, I get ray trace reflections on stuff. That's all kind of, yep, out of the box, that's what it does. But then he's like, actually, I can render 12 images at the same time in the same scene and completely affect my light board. So as I'm moving lights around, I can look at it from shot to shot all at once,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, he had all of that just basically piped in and rendering. And then you can have dependencies. You can kick off multiple renders at the same time and have dependencies on those renders.
Right.
So if I want to render something earlier in the tree,
yep.
I have a render that then kicks off other yeah, renders.
It's a pre-render. You can set mm-hmm. it up like a...
That, it's like,
to you, that seems crazy, but to a comper, it totally makes sense. What's different to the comper is suddenly they've introduced a ray tracing part of it, right?
Yep.
So what's interesting is it's going to... compositing is going to not be the same if you think about it that way, and it's going to take a little bit of time to realize what's possible. But someone like Shaheen was showing stuff that was insane, like him using V-Ray to ray trace simulate green spill and take the green spill and remove it from people.
Yeah,
that's to use a ray tracer to remove green spill was kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems a little overkill because people are like, I just removed. No, but he way more scientifically figured out where the green spill was and removed it much better than anything else. And sometimes green spill is really hard to remove, you know,
yep.
depending on what people are wearing and stuff.
So it's been pretty cool. I mean, it's been awesome to see that it's got some pretty solid production use mm-hmm. coming out and some of the work that Shaheen has done. Those films aren't out yet, but then it was, you know, it was used in the opening credits to Spectre for some of the reflections there, which was pretty yep. cool. And then we've also heard that people have used it for some of the kind of VR rendering because you needed a ray tracer inside a Nuke basically
to do better unwrapping.
Yeah. It was like, oh, good idea.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been used in some very interesting ways.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one to kind of watch to see how people come up with other
it's. I think that's uses. The thing is people have to, it's an opportunity for them to reinvent things because compositing is so powerful and introducing that type of rendering inside of a compositor changes the way you can think about things. So I think it's going to be interesting to do that. But speaking of other Foundry products, Vero for Modo now is continuing to be in the second version of the beta right now, right?
Yep, second version of the beta.
And that's an interesting one as well. I'm sure the Modo crowd is very interested to see what's going on there. Now, that's the other big question that happened. It's on Mac as well, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. I believe it is.
So people who are a Modo crowd can do that.
And one thing that's been fun with that is that we've been releasing quick start videos to help people get up and running with it.
Yes.
Get Modo users
same
up and running.
Same thing in Nuke as well. Yep.
And Nuke, and we've got it for the V-Ray for Revit beta, which
and,
I will talk
and
about.
And Richard Yacht, he's got such a great presentation voice.
Yeah. And it's funny because I interviewed Richard in a podcast years ago for Modo stuff, and he's kind of like a big Modo rendering guy, and his very enthusiastic towards rendering, and just having him, working with him on these videos for the V-Ray for Moto has been, it's been really, really great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But we had like big updates this year. I mean, the Max updates and Maya.
Yeah, I was going to get to service packs in a second, but I want to go for one last product, which is a huge one for us, which is V-Ray for Revit, right?
Yeah.
Those who, like, there's maybe a lot of people on this podcast who don't actually know what Revit is and don't realize how big a product it is. But Lon, why don't you tell them, those users, what Revit is, if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the way I always describe it to people is that for years, people have been using AutoCAD to build buildings, and then they decided, like, oh, wait a second, we need this to all be in 3D. And Revit came into the picture as a full sort of 3D building information model system. So many architecture firms, I don't know if we could say most, but many architecture firms are all moved on to that because it's such a great platform for designing. And, of course, like a lot of applications, it's got some rendering built in, but
it's mainly built for document making and product making.
Or... Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you design everything for your building, the HVAC system, just everything that goes into making it.
Right.
And it's a full live 3D database.
Yep.
And then your drawings or your, building documentation comes directly out of that.
Right.
So your specifications all get built into there and so on. And that's, that gives you everything you need to build it. But because it's a live 3D database
and you have a model
and you want to go through visualization and look at different design alternatives, et cetera, you want to have rendering tools. And of course there's always a bridge to Max or something like that if you want to do full marketing visuals and so on. But designers day to day, they want to look at 20, 50 different options, render right in the application, mm-hmm. have some really simple physical tools that are, accurate to the design, that they don't have to, worry about exporting to another application. And they just want it to be seamless to what they're working on. And that's where V-Ray for Revit comes in. It comes in as like that part of, somebody's workflow where they can just go, okay, hey, I want to see what this looks like with a sun study in this design what's this over, is this overhang too big or not? What's the glass like here?
So we give them full, V-Ray inside of that product, and we're doing it in a way that's specifically designed for that person.
Yeah. It's meant to be very tailored to that workflow, simple, and it also has to respect the database, right? So you're not doing anything in there or you're adding on layers of things that don't respect the database, because that's the most sacred part of what you're doing, right?
Yeah,
right.
It's not like the, ArcVis stuff that's got a bunch of...
Right, where you can just like delete half of, like that's what we did when we took Revit models into Max, is you're like, okay, turn off all the HVAC, turn off all the light switches.
Right.
That's a different process.
Right. So it's really kind of interesting to see that. But having released this product now, we're giving that power to, and it came out not long ago, like 3-4 weeks ago, right?
Yeah. The first public beta.
The first public beta of this. So it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. That's kind of a new way of thinking about V-Ray and reaching out to specifically, a group of people that have been very, very good to us for a long time, and giving them the power in an application that they literally use every day,
Yep.
I mean, Revit to an architect is like Word to a writer, It's like what they use every day.
I'm a writer and I hate Word.
Yeah, I would say David would probably disagree with.
But or it's basically.
He's a Ulysses. I'm a Ulysses fan as well.
Yeah. Ulysses.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're on a PC, so
I'm on WordStar. WordStar.
You're WordStar.
That's what George. VI. Yeah. What VI? Jesus, there's a Linux freak in here. Okay, so that was pretty cool. I'm glad we're able to do that. But let's now go to the service packs, because,
well, don't forget there was, even though V-Ray for Katana has been out and has been used for a while, the actual official launch was this past year.
Oh, right.
That was like
V-Ray for Katana, it was a major part of something that we talked about. We can start talking about the walk, but we'll talk about the walk in a bit because. But V-Ray for Katana was used for a walk. So yeah, geez, I can't even remember. I forgot about V-Ray for Katana.
We got to go through the year in review just to remind ourselves what the hell happened.
Yeah, that's true.
But I want to talk about the service packs again because we released V-Ray 3 last year, right?
For Max, we did.
Yep.
Maya.
Might have come out
at the beginning of the year.
That's fuzzy.
I don't remember.
It's fuzzy to me.
But it was.
I can hardly tell you what I had for breakfast this morning. So.
Yeah.
You had the BLT.
Okay.
But the.
On a brioche, Lon. A BLT, but no. On a brioche.
Now I remember.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
But yeah, the updates.
MLT, mutton, lamb, and tomato. I love that mutton.
Gotta.
The updates, the service packs are huge. In fact, they're so huge that I just recorded. I don't know when it's going to come out, if it's going to come out before this or after this, but I just recorded a podcast with Lele just on Service Pack 3 because it's fun. I mean, that could technically be
this it. Changes everything.
Specifically the sampler. It's huge and major updates along the way, which are really cool. So it's bigger than most. What's in this Service Pack 3 is bigger than most product releases for most other products.
It's like you introduce a new camera sensor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you introduced a new camera sensor.
Right.
It's one of the adjustments for me coming here is I'm used to service packs coming out and no features, maybe one couple little tweaks or refinements.
Yeah.
Enhancements with quote.
Using
dick fingers. Yeah. But for the most part, it's bug fixes, it's stability stuff, it's everything like that. But nope, when we do an update here, it is like a regular.
It's like a
0.5 release. Yeah, I mean it's a full.
Not even a 0.5. It's a
big
one.
Release. Yeah.
Like if this was V-Ray 4.0, I think people would be perfectly happy to pay for the upgrade. To be honest, because it's huge. Huge, like just the rounded corners and the Hosek Sky system and
aerial perspective,
just like all. And the sampler, it's like basically a whole new engine. We just took the whole engine out and put a new engine in there.
I'm a little hazy on aerial perspective.
Oh wow.
I see what you did there.
Pretty good.
Can you explain that?
Nope. Not going to.
All right.
Well, the second, even before this third one, the second one, we actually counted, literally looked at the changelog and counted the features, and we're like, "There's over a hundred new things in this."
Just the GPU, the V-Ray RT enhancements with each and every update.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very important that people say, because this, Lily and I talked about this before, where people say, "Oh yeah, I tried V-Ray GPU, and whatever, I'm back." And it's like, have you tried it recently? Because in the last year and a half, it's
whole
huge.
In the last 6 months.
Yeah. It's huge. Different. And I would basically highly, highly encourage people to continuously make sure that they are at the very least trying GPU rendering. Yep. And not necessarily on old scenes. I'm saying from the very beginning, when you start working in V-Ray, start using it in GPU, because I think you'll see that it's actually very, very useful.
And it's CUDA and OpenCL.
It is CUDA and OpenCL. So you can use it. There's a lot of enhancements. There's some stuff going on right now on the OpenCL side where it's open to AMD processors as well. So, or AMD GPUs as well. So big, big idea. We basically support more variety of hardware than any other things out there. So really huge. Let's see. One of the other things we mentioned, a lot of this was happening over around SIGGRAPH time, but one of the things that are happening right around that time, right after SIGGRAPH, we talked about it at SIGGRAPH, was the walk.
Yep.
So the walk was very interesting. Mainly it's because Kevin Bailey, who's head of Atomic Fiction, and him talking about kind of changing, revolutionizing the way that rendering and a VFX company works. Besides using V-Ray for Katana, which was a big deal for him in terms of getting fluidity in the workflow that he was looking for, he also did all of it rendered on the cloud.
Yep.
All rendered on the Google Cloud using their own system. They didn't use Zinc. They used
Conductor.
Conductor.
Yep.
So they've been doing cloud rendering for so long. I think 5 years they've been using cloud rendering, all in V-Ray, that they've developed their own system on this. And if you're interested in understanding more about cloud rendering and whether it's possible or what's the ideas or any apprehensions that you may have, listen to that podcast. We cover everything from security to cost to infrastructure to all of those things.
He's broken it down. Like, oh, he can show you the spreadsheets. Yeah. He can tell you the number of cores that they've used. I mean, it's
a different business model. And I think, to be honest, if anyone thinks that this is, that you're still going to be having a big render farm in the next 5-10 years, next few years, that's not going to happen. If you're not rendering on the cloud, you are wasting money, I think, is going to be the thing. And just having to basically spend that much money and worry about your air conditioning or worrying about all the other things, the cost of cloud is going to go way, way down. And that's going to be a different way of thinking, I think, right?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I remember talking to Kevin a few years back, just on, you know, when we were first talking about flight, and even at that point it was like, you know, he's from the future, right? and now it's like, it's, you know, they're still on that same trajectory where it's like they're figuring stuff out that is pretty amazing. And it's, you know, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to partner with them and work together on this to make it all happen. And actually, one of the cool things, this is going back to that notion about, you know, Boris can sort of just, he'll put together something and it'll work. We had to come up with some tech to make sure that the licensing could hook up and scale into the Google Cloud with no problem.
Yeah, because someone can suddenly launch. The thing about going on the cloud, right, is that you launch a render, you're not launching 10, 15, 20, 100. You say, I want to launch 10,000 computers now.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And so we're like, let's try this out. This new system that we have worked up to, you know, double check that it's going to handle everything. And it went down one time for like 5 minutes in the entire existence of it. And he had it fixed immediately. And it was just like a quick fix. And it was rock solid from the get-go throughout all of the rendering for
the complete production of the walk, right?
Yeah, for everything. And Boris is like, well, this thing, one instance of it can handle sort of 80,000 requests a second.
Right.
And like, if you get more requests than that, it'll just scale up to another. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So we can handle a whole lot of licensing requests and stuff over very fast.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So really, really cool. I think cloud rendering is going to be really interesting. And again, you know, that's Boris again, right? He's gonna make some incredible stuff happen on the cloud. He knows that stuff.
And the really entire cloud team is just, they're kicking ass. But
the cloud team is really cool. I think that Boris has got a really great idea about how that theme is going. The innovation that's coming out of his group is fantastic and it's very, very diverse. And I think that's the future in a lot of ways.
And we should also say that, I mean, for me, The Walk was one of my favorite movies of the year. It was like, we took everybody from the office. We went to go see it in 3D. And I know Chris doesn't normally like 3D, but said, yeah.
Or heights.
No, right? It was good. It was very, very good.
And man, it was well done.
Yeah, it was really good. I think obviously it's a lot of it's a build up towards that last scene. Or, you know, in terms of the actual walk.
Yeah.
And people's like, well, I don't want to see that because it's not Man on the Wire or whatever. I was like, okay, all right, fine. But what it is, it's giving you, specifically if you see it on IMAX 3D, it is giving you an opportunity to be there in a place where you can sense it, right? You could look down this wire, you could see all the stuff, and you'd have the feeling of it. And it wasn't going to make you, it didn't make, and I have vertigo, right? It didn't make me nauseous or feel sick or anything. It just, you know, gave me anxiety, you know, but in a good, exciting, thrilling way. That's the whole point. It was thrilling, right? It was really thrilling to see something
beautiful at the same time.
When it's got the style of VFX that I love, the ones that you don't
even know.
The one ones you don't know.
You can't necessarily call them invisible because you know that
it's not 70s New York.
Yeah, it doesn't. You know that 70s. You know,
and there's clearly no World Trade Center there anymore. But yeah, those they don't look like map paintings either. They look like the city, and it's an incredible amount of work done. And it, obviously, it's not just all Atomic Fiction. There's a lot of
guys at Rodeo and UPP did awesome work.
Fantastic work.
I hope they make it
to the top five. Yep. I definitely think that there's a good chance of that, and I think it'd be nice to see that for sure.
That reminds me, one thing I really loved from this year, one project that somebody did that I loved this year was the World Trade Center elevator.
Yeah,
the elevator ride that Blur did.
Yeah.
That's like a personal, like one of the projects that came out this year that one of the studios did that I just thought was very impactful and really interesting.
Well, explain
and
to different. People what it is.
So when you go to the new observation deck at the World Trade Center, you go up in the elevator, mm-hmm. and while you're going up, it plays you basically a chronological history of New York.
Yep,
so right. Start like from the.
But it's in the perspective of the elevator going up at the same time.
Yeah,
so it's rising.
It's what your aerial
videos,
view.
It's videos inside the elevator. So basically, your entire elevator is a giant video screen.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, say that.
Yeah, and it's an aerial view looking over New York. They did it a couple different times a day. One during the day, one in the evening, depending on
what time you arrive.
Yeah,
and then it time lapses the sort of evolution of New York over the past 300-400 years, I think it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To the construction of the observation deck.
Right.
And there's this moment where, you know, the Twin Towers, the original Twin Towers show up and then they disappear.
They kind of, they flicker out.
And it's like this visceral, it's a really visceral feeling, even though there's just a very subtle sound cue. There's no, you know, they didn't really make a big deal of it, but you feel it.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, the building resolves around you. The new structure is kind of finishes building around you as the doors open up and you walk out.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary, extraordinary project.
And then you reverse paths on the way down, but about halfway down, it takes you on the sort of out of body or out of building experience.
Willy Wonka elevator.
Where the elevator flies out to look back at the building, and it's mm-hmm. it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I shared that, I got permission to share that at State of Art with the guys there, and it was pretty cool. It was cool to see that, and also in conjunction with the walk, right? Because those
actually, I want to say that real quick because you, while we're still on cloud for a second, I want to talk a little bit about you. You were a big speaker about cloud this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been working on embracing the cloud from the beginning. We see the merit of it, and a lot of our customers are asking to get there in multiple ways. And so I had an opportunity to speak at NAB this year with a few folks from Autodesk and Google, and Kevin, of course, was there, mm-hmm. Talking about the walk and
DreamWorks.
And DreamWorks, yeah. And so it was cool. One of the things that I tried to do a little bend on my talk was, you know, let's assume offline rendering is already solved, right? Let's assume that that's a given, even though there's still a few things to solve, but most of that's from the business side of things, honestly. Mm-hmm. Let's actually look at the cloud from the perspective of what else could you do with it, which is kind of more, you know, a labsy type thing. And you know, I showed connecting it to Motion Builder in real time, and you know, what if you could ray trace 24 frames a second and all of this, and what if you could just do live rendering on a cluster of any, you know, 10,000 machines, mm-hmm. whenever you want. So as Joe User, I have a laptop and I have my scene and I want to look at things, and I don't even kind of care what it's rendering to. It's just going to some collection of machines. That's my super machine that I, you know, pay for. And you know, that was kind of my spin on it, and had a lot of people go like, that sounds really cool. Mm-hmm. Because the idea of offline rendering, it's, you know, that's not necessarily new. It's just a different render farm, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, it's a render farm that you can kind of elastically scale, which is cool.
Right.
But I think the power is, you know, having that live connection to it is going to be something that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, obviously Boris is putting us into it. It's just the fact that our connection is so fast is enabling things to move, to change the way that you think about rendering, right?
Yep.
So that's really, really kind of cool. So
sorry about the coughing.
Well, that's all right. It's all right. Kevin was part of V-Ray Days in LA, but we also did V-Ray Days in Stuttgart at FMX. We did it in Dubai. We did it in Mumbai. We did it in Sao Paulo. So we've actually done V-Ray Days quite a bit around the world. And it's something that's very successful, and hopefully we can continue to do those,
yeah,
those
and, presentations. And one of our friends, Jorge Barrera from Gensler, you know, we emailed him or said, like, hey, by any chance – we have this presentation going on in Dubai. Would you be available to, you know, for us to send you out there and talk about it? Mm-hmm. And he had been working on that project, which was the first sort of 3D printed building in Dubai.
Yeah.
And I think it was like 3D printed concrete, if I remember right. And of course, you know, Jorge is another one of those guys that's from the future. And it happened to be that at the exact same time that we were doing that presentation, they were just doing like a grand unveiling of it. So it was perfect timing to go there and say, like, hey, by the way, now we're, you know, we're visualizing this stuff and then we're 3D printing buildings.
Right.
Which is really awesome.
So yeah, it was really kind of cool to see that we'll be able to do these presentations, these V-Ray days all around the world. Another thing I want to talk about briefly is Digital Film League. We've been talking a lot. Obviously, we talked about Construct and Roy Robinson and those guys, and we've focused a lot of things on we go out to dinner, and we talk about things, and we talk about what we want to do, and a lot of it happens.
It's like a Scotch club,
kind of. and we talk about what the future of what we want to talk about, and it's all VR. A lot of them are like interested in the new medium of VR and how that's going to relate to storytelling, and they all think it's very fascinating to do that. So we did a lot of work in there, and we've got some very interesting people that have been recently part of the Digital Film League, including Justin Denton, who is over at Legend VR.
Another one of a really good podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
His conversations about VR are just so, like,
his presentations are stuff. Great. He knows his stuff.
And he's so excited. Like, mm-hmm. You can't help but get excited about it.
Yeah.
Because he's so enthusiastic about it.
He's not pitchy, because VR is so pitchy right now. You know what I mean?
Actually,
he's informative.
He's more like, get out there and just make mistakes and break rules and figure it out, because, you know, we had a lot of people tell us that that's the wrong thing to do. You can't do this. And we just did it anyway.
Yeah.
And it works.
So he was a really big idea that sort of contributed to my education on VR, as well as our conversation with Kim, who we did a podcast with him as well.
Yep.
From the ArcViz side of things and the architecture side of things. And he, that led us to doing a really cool little
The
guide to VR, right? So the guide to VR is something we've put out there. It's been very successful. It's on our lab site if you want to go check it out. And it basically gives us, you, the power to make VR content and using V-Ray that you have now.
And it's got best practices for any VR content. I mean, it's got information there for
rendered VR content.
For anyone, interested in rendered VR content, it's useful.
And one of the reasons, I mean, obviously, one of the reasons being that we're helping provide some tools for that, but also that's available right now. And that's one of the things that I was saying to folks at State of Art, or people that I get into conversations about, is that I feel like the more we can explore this new medium, the faster we can explore it. I said it at State of Art, said it at Autodesk University. Like, get out there and try it so that we can get to awesome VR. And I will put up a message on the big screen where I was like, save us from shitty VR, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't want to see the Netflix Lodge
Right.
No. Ever again.
There's no reason for it. And I think the one thing we learned is that VR is VR is something that we are aware of that needs to be put in the right light. And the opportunity for architecture and architecture visualization is so huge and such an obvious fit.
Yeah. Virtual world building is part of their DNA.
And the people right now making content have no architecture background, have no idea how to design space. And the people that are the architects out there don't know how to do VR. So we're providing them with some great ideas out there. Cool thing is we got two great ArcViz guys to hand us our project, and we can showcase what do you take when you take the National Library in France and you take the Aldo Tadao Ando church that was done by Aldo Garcia and Bertrand Benoit, who did a library, and we make a VR version of that. So we showed examples. So people are like, just go there, check it out, and realize, oh, this changes everything. This is what I can do. So I want the architects to be able to do that. And this is a medium for you. And VR is a new real estate.
Yep.
Right? You don't have to design spaces that are going to be built. You can design completely virtual places. And in fact, that is going to be in demand. There are going to be VR companies that are going to want a house or a building or a room or an auditorium or whatever.
In the early 2000s, in a previous life, worked on a project with a guy who is he's a world famous designer. I think he spends most of his time designing really killer yachts now.
Nice.
But at the time, he had this idea, and I want to design virtual spaces on Mars. And I want to sell these, you know, like lease these out for people to experience them and own these virtual real estate. And you paid something like, I think it was 20 zonars. He made a currency up for this thing. And at the time we were just doing QTVRs, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know, $20 or 20 zonars a month for QTVRs, for access to QTVRs is probably not that cool. It was for, you know, the early 2000s, yeah. But now the idea of like, you could actually have this really killer virtual space. Yeah.
And it's Bitcoins.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, and that's an actual currency somehow.
But what's interesting also is the idea of art and VR that's happening. And I know we've talked a little bit with Kevin Mack about it, and I'm working, you know, closely with Kevin now to do some stuff, but there's actually someone else who approached me recently about some more art in VR and what they're doing. And I think it's going to be a new medium that people need to explore. And it's not, I'm think that 2016 is going to be the year of less pitching you VR stuff and actual more VR the real ideas of what the VR products are going to be, the real content is going
to
come out.
You're
of
You're going to go to the virtual museum to see the virtual exhibits.
Yes. So we'll see what happens in 2016 with VR, and we'll be working on it.
The Museum of Virtual Art.
It's not one of those things.
MOVA.
It's not just a buzzword or buzz thing technology that's going to be a flash in the pan. It's not going away.
No, it's not. The only other thing I want to bring up is THU a little bit. Obviously, that's a big event for us. We went in 2014, Gina and I, we went there as a sort of reconnaissance.
Scouting mission.
Immediately fell in love with the idea of it.
They came back with tattoos. I think they're illegally married in Portugal now. I don't think it sticks here, thankfully.
No, I don't think
so. Something about international waters.
Yeah.
It was crazy that what happened, and we really loved it. And this year we went all in. We were big sponsors of it. I brought my podcast equipment with me. I recorded 7 podcasts over there, including some incredible ones with Norman Seif and another one with Scott Ross and Kevin Mack. And the Alex Alvarez one was really great too, talking about his push on education. So some very powerful ones. Another thing that we did was help with THU TV. You can actually go and check out THU TV on Vimeo to see a huge amount of content on there. It's a really, really great event that we loved being a part of. And I really can't can't wait to see what's going to happen. It wasn't, for those that who have listened to a podcast, it was basically announced that we don't know the future of what it's going to be. We did go to a THU LA meetup over at Noman, and it's looking much more positive that there is going to be a THU in 2016. So those of you who are interested in it, you should check it out and follow up on news, and we'll see what we can do to cover some of that news. But it's a very transformative existence and experience for me. I love it. It was funny because I was talking to Davis Trepenis, who was on the podcast last week, and he was basically telling me that I talk about THU, he feels that I joined a cult. And no one can understand it. I was actually, when I was over at 3D Symposium, I was hanging out with the guys over there. And it's like, what is up with this event? Why is it that anyone who I talk to who's ever gone to this THU thing talks about it like they just, like it's a church or something?
They're Burning Man.
I just like, the idea of like the closing ceremony at THU, you have a crowd of 700 people just chanting Andre, Andre, Andre. Like what? I mean, that is like a cult. It does, it's kind of crazy. So you don't see that at SIGGRAPH. You don't see anyone chanting someone's name and like stomping their feet on the ground and creating all this noise. You don't do that for George Lucas. People don't do that for George Lucas, no. So yeah. So I think there's a lot of interesting things going on there. So that kind of brings up most of what we're going to talk about. We're just over an hour, so it's good. But Lon.
Uh-oh.
And uh-oh. David.
Yeah.
2016.
Holy shit. Holy. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I should note that the amount of time that I'm able to spend with Lon is
diminished exponentially.
You and I used to hang out all the time.
Yep.
The chances that I could get you in this room right now were so small, but it happened. I don't know how it happened, but I got you sitting down.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are.
2016. What are you thinking?
Yeah. It's going to be
predictions.
It's going to be wild. It's going to be wild. We have we've got a lot of new software coming out. Some updates to some pretty major stuff, the SketchUp and Rhino, and of course Revit will be a new product, and Modo will be officially announced. We have a couple of other things, some other early announcements up our sleeve, some technology we've been working on.
January should be good.
Yep, we're basically like taking a little time to recharge the battery at over the holidays, and then come to 2016 with the full head of steam.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Like I need the holidays just to wrap my brain around it a little bit. Just, I need to regroup.
Yep.
I don't know what the left and right hand are saying anymore. it's a little bit hard. One thing I'm shocked is that I've been able to still put out a podcast once a week. And that's been.
It's commendable. It's actually.
It is commendable.
It's been able to do that is one thing that I know is like, that's the one thing, I think that's the one thing that keeps me sane. It's like, if I can put the podcast out on Sunday, then at least I did something that was finished. And the VRA guide was really,
I think
one.
More and more of those things we're talking about.
Yep. We're talking about several more of those. So if you guys like that guide to VR, we're making more of those. If you would like suggestions on a different subject, let us know about that as well. So those will be good. Sorry about that. But yeah, it'll be very interesting. And with that said, I think, we'll keep you posted, obviously, as we usually do in the intros, about all the different things we're going to be up to, and follow us there and let us know what you think of these podcasts or any other ones on the comment section, and rate us on iTunes. And I think my goal for the podcast personally now, I can't believe it is where it is now. I'd like to see if I can get, broaden the amount of people and industries that are on here. I know a lot of it is very much centered on VFX, or a lot of it has to be VFX heavy. But I think what I've found is that we can all learn from each other a lot in different industries.
So maybe we'll go stalk Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Is he even working out of the Tesla office down there?
I don't know. We should go talk to him.
Yeah.
We do know a couple people down there at Tesla.
Let's ask him, like, hey, what do you think about rendering?
Can we render with solar power?
Like, let's let that be a goal.
Let's see Elon Musk. Yeah.
And a big thank you to all the artists and people that we've worked with over this year, just because
absolutely.
We got to meet with and work with people that have a million other things going on, and they've, you know, given us stories and time and information and ideas, and it's made a huge impact.
They've been really, really kind. Really, really kind.
Yeah.
People like the Aldo Garcias and the, you know, Roy Robinsons, the Miguels and the Bertrands and the, you know, all those guys.
Yeah.
Victor Hugo. God, call him out. My buddy Victor Hugo over down in Sao Paulo. Love that guy. Victor and his wife, who is the most awesome person ever. The two of them as a couple is just awesome. They were supposed to be on my podcast at THU, and the schedule never works. So one of these days, I'm either going to see them at the next THU, or I'm going to go to Sao Paulo and hang out with them, because Victor is just one of the sweetest guys out there. And he did amazing, amazing renderings as well of incredibly well-developed characters that are really fun.
I love his little X-Men guy.
The
Nightcrawler.
And he did one of Hermione, right? So he does this great rendering of Hermione with her cat and her just protesting. She's got this sort of grumpy look on her face. And he signed it for my daughter. So it's awesome.
That's nice. Awesome. She's such a Harry Potter fan.
Don't even get me started.
So is Gina, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So am I.
But. Yeah. Well, yeah, but it's, I'm sorry.
Not to the same level.
Not to that level. Yeah. Like, yeah, not, there's a whole new level of Harry Potterness that's kind of crazy.
Like, in Gina's first day at work, she looked at the sign of Wong Duty, who's the office next door, and they had the different crests.
Should I say that again?
Wong Duty. Mm-hmm. and she's like, oh, we're working next to Slytherin.
Yep.
Not that Wong Duty's bad. They had a crest logo that looked like the Slytherin crest.
Yeah. Wong Duty is a really cool company that does neighbors with, like you said, they had a crest logo on there. So
if you're a choosing hat, what would be the school that you'd get chosen for in Harry Potter? Do you know realistically what school you'd be in?
What's the badger one?
Hufflepuff?
No, not Hufflepuff.
There's Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw.
I'd probably be a Ravenclaw. Because Ravenclaws are the geeky ones, right?
They're like the smart...
They're all geeky.
But what's the, Harry's in
Gryffindor.
Now, they're the jocks, really, because they're always winning the cup. You know what I mean? They're like the jocks. You know what I mean? This is, by the way, this is a completely ripoff of Chris Hardwick talking on Nerdist about why he is a Ravenclaw.
He's a Ravenclaw?
He's a Ravenclaw because
he's
a nerd.
They're all very studious in Ravenclaw, and I feel like I'm not smart enough to be in Ravenclaw. I think they're all smart in Ravenclaw.
The Hufflepuffs are the double leader.
That's my school.
No, that's totally right.
Realistically, at the end of the day, like, no.
You're a Hufflepuff.
I know what school is going to be chosen for me. It'll be Hufflepuff. It'll be actually one tier below Hufflepuff. It'll be like the Dindle Duffs or something like that.
Yeah, the alternates.
I didn't even make varsity. I didn't even make varsity when it comes to the schools. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I honestly have no idea. I have no idea what I am.
Yeah.
You're Gryffindor.
You think so?
Yeah. 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 Quidditch is like tennis.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Gina's totally Slytherin, though.
No hesitation.
None. No, just like calls it like it is and yells at people. And no, I'm just kidding. Gina's lovely. We all know that. Okay. That's about it, I think. You guys wrap it up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy holidays.
Last bucket.
No more buckets. We got to come up with a new one.
Yeah.
I did this with Lele. It's like, because buckets, I'd like, if people are still using buckets in the next year or so, you're doing it wrong. So we have to come up with a new catchphrase. So goal for 2016.
New catchphrase. That's something that we should get everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Put that up on Yammer.
Yeah. New catchphrase.
Yeah. No, on the Twitter account. Let's actually see.
Oh, on tweets.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Tweet to Labs, the new catchphrase.
All right. I'll put it up there.
Help. We need your help.
Okay. Something happened. All right. Thanks, guys. For now, we'll let the last bucket drop. Right.